Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is Neat. It's a weekly booze cast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
This week has a very important twist. But we're going to get into that in a second.
How
was your life this week?
It was good. I found a cat on the street.
Yeah, you did.
He followed me home. Okay, so I wouldn't normally do this. I mean, I pet like strange cats on the street all the time. Probably not the wisest thing.
Yeah, that cat that you pet the other day when we were out together, I mean, that was a hardened street warrior.
He came up to me. He wanted it.
But, I mean, that cat was like, he's a dirty boy.
He was a dirty boy, but he was still a sweet boy. You know, you gotta, he didn't even want, like, food from me. He just wanted a little love. He just wanted a little pet. You know, I have hand sanitizer. I wash my hands. I take care of myself.
I'm not judging you. I'm just, also, you know.
It never really hurts to get a little bit of those strange germs in you, you know?
I mean, that's true. That's how you build up immunity.
But this cat, the other night, I was actually not paying attention. I was walking home, and he came running up to me.
Hello, help, hello.
Hello. Excuse me.
I have a problem.
I'm outside.
I don't know why I'm outside.
So this really cute tuxedo kitty came up, and I gave him some pets like I would a stray cat, and I was a little drunk, so, you know, like, I was very excited to meet a new friend.
That is exact. I was a little drunk years ago when I ended up letting a pregnant kitty into my house and having kittens on the floor of my house. I think they know.
Yeah.
They're like, you smell like a cat and whiskey. I can get you to take care of me.
You seem like a sucker, kid. Well, he came up to me and I gave him some pets, and then I started walking and he started following me, and I was like, oh no, this kitty needs somewhere to go. Obviously, it's raining. I felt bad, but I can't take a strange cat into my house because of my living situation, and I live with several people and I rent a very small room right now, and I have a cat in my room. So I couldn't bring him. Luna would not have been with it. She would have been.
That wouldn't have gone well.
And I wouldn't have been able to, like, keep him in my bathroom. But what I did was, because I remembered that my roommates who live up the stairs and have a big room, they were talking about getting a cat a while ago. So I FaceTimed them and I asked them if I could bring the cat, and I offered to go get supplies for the cat. And first they said yes, and I proceeded to have the cat follow me 7 blocks. Then when I got home and I knocked on the door, they were like, oh, you didn't get my text. And they had changed their minds. I mean, I don't blame them. It's a very big responsibility for sure. So I ended up calling my really, really dear friend, also like a bleeding heart animal lover like me, and also had a spare hallway to keep him in quarantined, because you don't know by looking at them, like, if they're like FIV positive, like if they have ringworm, something like that, that's like easily passed on to other animals, so you don't want to expose the animals that you have. What ended up happening is I took him to the Animal Care Center of New York, where they're actually looking at him right now. They're gonna give him a med check because his ears were kind of hot. He was so sweet, though. What they said was he was, like, by his demeanor, he was likely somebody's kitty at one point. He was a house cat. Because he was kind of dirty, and they were like, yeah, like, cats that start out in houses, like, they can't, or apartments, inside cats, like, they don't know how to take care of themselves.
Soft boys.
Okay. Yeah. A soft tuxedo boy.
Aww.
But he's really sweet. I got his ID number and everything. Like, I got the paperwork so I can keep checking up on him and monitor how he's doing and make sure that everything goes well. So, you know, I think it'll be good. It's a happy ending so far. That's probably the most exciting thing that's happened to me in a while.
That, it's always nice when a cat recognizes you as a helper. ask you for help. Yeah. Well, that's lovely. Well, I hope he's well. I've been in the market for a second cat for a while. So, you know, I have my son that I would want to make sure that another cat was very healthy to, you know, put them in contact with each other. And I would be down to take a cat if that cat is healthy.
Okay, so. Well, I'm checking up on him. So yeah, stay tuned, know. Listeners. Taylor might have a second cat soon.
I'm just going to have a little crew of tuxedo cats, and they're going to be like my little mafia. Jack Caddington already sounds like, you know, like an old gangster. So I'm just like, they're all going to be wearing the little suits, and they're all going to have like cool, yeah, like mafia names.
Well, they made me name him at the shelter, like to kind of just like keep tabs on him or whatever. Yeah. And he has like really fierce eyeliner, like the black around his eyes goes down his nose. It's like contour.
Okay, he's got a contour.
He's got a contour, but in a fierce Egyptian bold black line. Anyway, I couldn't think of anything, so I said King Tut.
That is a best. Well, the Egyptians worshipped cats. So yeah. That makes sense.
And he's like a very, like, he's an adolescent boy, 1 or 2 years old, and King Tut was a little king boy.
Little king boy. All right. Well, okay, we'll stay tuned for the continual odyssey of little king boy. little King Tut.
Yes. This week, our topic comes from some Patreon questions. This was inspired by RJ and Ellen. I'll read RJ's question first. So, first, history of the old fashioned. This is one drink that seems to be really simple. I make them all the time, but it's also a drink where people seem to have very specific preferences on how they're made, i.e. simple syrup versus fine sugar, whether or not you muddle the cherry, etc. There also seems to be quite a bit of history behind this drink. Then again, I'm judging this on the fact that Don Draper's old fashioned looks nothing like mine. Good question. But we also have a question that goes into the sordid history of the old fashioned. So Ellen says, hello, I would love, love, love an episode on the old fashioned. We're doing it. We're doing it right now. It's one of my favorite cocktails. I'm so happy it seems to be making a comeback. The most interesting thing for me personally about it is the version I grew up with in Wisconsin. We love our old fashions in Wisconsin, but we make them with brandy, not bourbon. I personally love both versions, as I'm a huge bourbon drinker, but I wonder why Wisconsin latched onto the brandy old fashioned. Are there any other regional variations on this cocktail that are so defining as the brandy old fashioned is to Wisconsin? Good questions. Good questions. Well, we have to start at the beginning, don't we?
Yeah. You might have guessed from its name, it's been around for a long time.
It's old.
Yeah. I've gotten this question before. Is it old fashioned or old fashioned? It's old fashioned.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. That's what I thought. I got real nervous for a second because I just assumed.
No, and I've seen it like hyphenated, like old hyphen fashion. I don't think it needs it. I think more commonly it's just old fashioned. But before we ever got around to naming it, the drink was really synonymous with the origin of the concept of a cocktail. So when we talk about where did an old fashioned come from, I mean, there was a point where what is in an old fashioned, the recipe in its simplest form, really just was our early idea of what a cocktail was. 1806 is when we kind of get the first time we get the word cocktail with a definition of cocktail. This is in a newspaper called The Balance and Columbian Repository. But it described a cocktail as a stimulating liquor composed of spirits of any kind, sugar, water, and bitters. Now, that sounds really familiar to you. It's because that is the basics of an old fashioned.
There you go.
I mean, obviously the whiskey part is the one thing that says any kind of liquor. The whiskey is sort of essential to a classic old fashioned, which is sort of where the next step in the evolution of what would eventually become the old fashioned happens. The decision of whiskey being the central ingredient. But of course, if we're talking about like the invention of the old fashioned, well, it'd be weird to invent something and call it old fashioned.
Yeah, that doesn't seem...
Obviously, like, the people back in the day weren't calling it, you know, an old fashioned, just as much as your vintage dress wasn't called vintage when it was first produced.
Seems fair.
That would be weird. No, in this case, the roots of the old fashioned are found in something that was called the whiskey cocktail. Now,
simple.
Yeah. And then this is really, you kind of get where this idea comes from. Once again, I would be hard pressed to call this an invention of anybody, because we had the concept of a cocktail that says it's a spirit, sugar, water, bitters. And then this one is, it's a whiskey cocktail. So the spirit is whiskey and then sugar, water, bitters. So more of just an evolution of thought and not really anything that you could say someone had an aha moment.
Yeah.
So we get the first printed mention of a whiskey cocktail in 1862. And this was just recorded by Jerry Thomas. It's a figure we really need to do a whole episode about him.
Of course.
The thing that Jerry Thomas did that was so important is he started writing down recipes. That doesn't mean he claimed all these recipes as his own inventions. They were definitely not. But he was the first one to really record them and then pass them along.
Smart.
Very important step in bartending.
So good.
Yeah.
Finally get some clarification on some shit.
And then also kind of locks in time so people can stop saying, well, I invented it here. You can go back to these books like Jerry Thomas and say, well, Jerry Thomas knew about it here.
Right.
His recipe called for Boker's Bitters. That was a popular 19th century, very earthy bitter, unfortunately lost to us during Prohibition. So it had Boker's Bitters, gum syrup, but that is really just a sweet sugar syrup that's using gum arabic. So there's nothing it's a sweetening element, and a wine glass of whiskey topped with a lemon twist. So that is pretty much the rough outline of what we have today. Jerry Thomas was the first to print it. Like I said, he didn't claim to have invented it, and other people did try to lay claim to it. Not around this time. Most of the people that claimed the cocktail claimed it decades later in retrospect. I'm going to talk about two of them that are definitely not, and then I'm going to give you what I think where it probably came from. Right. And it's not a person, it's more of a place. Now, we have, of course, we have a New Yorker that says it was his.
Why not?
This New York barman by the name of Colonel Jim Gray. Colonel Jim Gray. He was very much a character, kind of larger than life. You know, he talked about how he set out to return to the old-fashioned style of drinking, and so he made his drink. It was an article in The Sun printed in the 1910s where he lays claim to it. So it was long after the invention. Like I said, 1862, Jerry Thomas is saying it exists. So this is in 1910 now.
Oh, that's way late.
Yeah. And Gray is saying, oh no, I made this back in 81. I made this in 1881. But a lot of things about his story in this newspaper don't add up. The biggest thing is that the recipe that they give, it's completely wrong.
That seems important.
Well, yeah, it's it says no bitters whatsoever. It includes nutmeg.
Oh.
And it's shaken. I do want to say that this guy was a serious quality bartender who did have his hand in the invention of a lot of really important cocktails. Just probably not this one.
Probably not.
And more common theories have suggested that maybe the reporter got it wrong, because around this time there was a drink that was associated with this bartender that was called the old-fashioned toddy.
Oh,
that was whiskey and nutmeg and it was shaken. So
okay,
yeah,
right. So this might be a clerical error.
Yeah,
more.
I don't want to stain the legacy of Jim Gray. I think that he just got the shaft in this reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one person that they definitely want the claim, even though I think that they're also lying, and I think you know about this, the Pendennis Club in Louisville.
Yeah. James Pepper is who we're talking about, claimed this shit.
But the thing, once again, his recipe kind of shows how wrong he is.
Shows his hand.
Well, yeah, because one of the things he says has to be in the recipe is muddled fruit, which, as we will get into in depth this episode, muddled fruit is a step in the evolution of the old fashioned, but that definitely wasn't what we were doing in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Thomas was really a trailblazer in that he was writing stuff down. There weren't people really concerned about the history of bartending at the time like they are now.
Okay.
So, and I mean, you know, this was also the era of bartender as showman. Like, people wanted to have those reputations and those claims as being the inventors of these things, and there was no written history, so people just laid claim to stuff. Yeah.
And Why not?
Well, yeah.
The opportunity is right there.
But, you know,
there's no internet.
Exactly. Like, you could just say it, and I mean, you know, this happened at a bar in Louisville, Kentucky. You know, the other one was in New York, and they're claiming it 20 years in the past, So they're saying that that's when they did it. So it's really, it's not like we have records to back this up. Before I get too far into this, I do want to say a lot of my information for this episode came from the book The Old Fashioned by Robert Simonson.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great book. It's much more expansive than what we're going to talk about here. It also has a ton of recipes, like both old school classic recipes. A lot of these that we're referencing, they record in this book, and also a bunch of new riffs. So just, I want to say that real, like, definitely buy the book or look up the book if you're interested in knowing more about this topic, because it's amazing.
That's one good book.
But one kind of theory that this book pieces together, which is really smart, is that who invented the old fashioned, I don't think is really a thing. I think that there was already kind of an idea of all of this, that no one made it, but probably it did come from a place.
Right.
And that place is Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Yeah. Chicago, Illinois is like a it's pride and joy. I'll stop now.
I mean, it's history just kind of, it's deeply tied to Chicago. Chicago was heavy in the whiskey drinking, the early cocktail scene. Like, obviously New York was a big front runner, but Chicago was right there with it. The person who would eventually give the name Old Fashioned, the Old Fashioned, which we're going to get to, he was from Chicago. Like, the newspaper article that eventually led to the name the Old Fashioned was by a writer from Chicago. Also, around this time at the Waldorf Astoria, you could order a tea Chicago style, and what you would get would be an Old Fashioned.
What? Time was that?
This was like late 1800s. It was for ladies that might want to drink at the bar.
Oh, for the ladies.
Yeah, but they don't want to be seen ordering a drink, so you could just order tea in the Chicago style, and you would get an Old Fashioned.
Oh, great. So, but you don't want to order a drink, but you'll still receive a drink.
Yeah, you'll still sit there drinking a glass of whiskey, but you didn't order it. I want to think that they'd serve it in a teacup. Like, that's what I found no information on how it was served, but I want to believe that they'd be like, oh, here you go. And it's just straight booze, but in a teacup or an old fashioned, which is straight booze.
I mean, that's the ticket. I just want to but I do want to see like an old fashioned lady like, oh, who ordered this? I certainly didn't. Well, it's right here. Can't waste it.
Anyway, so to get us back on our timeline here, you know, we've got the origin of the whiskey cocktail. The start of the 19th century in America, whiskey really wasn't the jam of everybody. There was a lot of, there was still kind of a taste for the old world spirits. But as Americans start making whiskey, we develop more of a taste for whiskey. And this really leads to kind of like the boom of whiskey in more like, you know, the mid-19th century. Mm. There's a lot of great, anecdotal enjoyment of the whiskey cocktail during this time. Like, during the Civil War, whiskey cocktail was made in batches and sold as provisions to Union soldiers.
That's great.
John Wilkes Booth was recorded as lamenting that the continuous consumption of whiskey cocktails helped dull his pain at mere existence. The John Wilkes Booth.
Come on, yeah, guys.
There was a Civil War hero, Winfield Scott Hancock, who was praised both for his bravery at Gettysburg, but also as being the man in the Union Army who made the best whiskey cocktail. So
that's a great reputation. I want that reputation.
There's even a historical footnote about President Garfield's, this is a little later, but President Garfield's funeral, where there was a list of expenses and that included $300 for whiskey cocktails.
We spared no expense.
Yeah.
We couldn't do without it.
Many, many pearls were clutched, I think, in that fact. Oh my God. A couple things about this time period as far as how and why they're consuming so many of these whiskey cocktails. For one thing, it was considered a matutinal cocktail.
What does matutinal mean?
That's a term I just learned today. It's a drink you have in the morning.
Oh, like the eye openers.
Yeah. There was
the literal definition of cocktail.
Yep.
What the pharmacists were doing.
Exactly. You know, that was kind of the other important point to this, is that this is the same time period you had snake oil salesmen and you had the apothecary is very popular. You had pharmacists making old fashions for you as sort of that's the thing that's going to get you going during the day. Because bitters were developed as these things that we thought were going to be cure-alls. Like, we thought they were going to do all these great things for us. Mm-hmm. And we still had a lot of medicinal history behind it. I mean, we have medicinal history behind all alcohol, really. So, you know, it's not like how we look at drinking now as something that's purely for relaxation and kind of an indulgence. At the time, it was something that it was just how you started your day.
You got to take your whiskey first thing in the morning.
Yeah, there was this like an 1874 newspaper piece that appeared. It was in a Pennsylvania paper, and it said, "A bourbon whiskey cocktail before breakfast is the best thing for the complexion."
Oh, it's good for your skin, eh?
Your skin. That's what I've been doing wrong.
I've just been rubbing bourbon all over my face every day. It's a really good toner, you know? It's great for exfoliating.
A lot of toners have alcohol. That's, you know.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I wasn't just talking out of my ass. But like, there's 4 steps in a skincare routine, and I put it where it makes the most sense. It's the cleanser, toner, serum, moisturizer, guys.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was like the 4 steps to making it old-fashioned, and then you drink. Oh,
no, I was like, oh, well, this is the same.
That's my skincare routine.
It's the same. They're
sugar,
the same.
Bitters, boost, ice. Stir, I don't know. Twist, 4 ingredients.
That's good, twist. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
So
we digress.
As we approach the 1900s, bartenders begin making improved versions of the whiskey cocktail. So they're
improved. Are those the quotations around?
Improved, yes. Bunny fingers, improved versions of the whiskey cocktail. They add absinthe, they add curacao, they're adding vermouth. You know, this is also, they're getting more and more like different modifiers from Europe are coming over, and they're kind of taking the drink farther away from that. The sort of simple beginnings that made it popular in early on in the 1800s.
Okay.
This has, of course, a reaction.
A strong reaction?
Yes. You know, when we talk about when did the whiskey cocktail, which we kind of recognize as the same structure and build as the old-fashioned, when did the name sort of shift to the old-fashioned or kind of become more commonly referred to as an old-fashioned?
I've been dying to know. There's a lot of conflicting information out there.
Well, some people can link it to, like, there's this article called The Cocktail Today. It's written in 1886, and it's by Leander Richardson. He's a Chicago dude. So,
Chicago, yeah. Illinois. And he's like, okay. I won't.
Yeah, will you? But he basically writes, he laments about how the old-fashioned drink has sort of been lost, and he talks to another barman, and he quotes this barman in his interview, and he's like, you know, that he feels like now bartending is about, like, selling a brand that's you and all your unique cocktails and your unique takes. Actually reminded me a little bit about what it's a little bit like today. but that he wishes we could just get back to like the old fashioned cocktails, like the old fashioned way of making a good whiskey cocktail. And so that idea, the old fashioned idea of the whiskey cocktail, catches on. And that term specifically catches on. You know, it's 1888 that we see the first printed recipe for an old-fashioned, like, called an old-fashioned. And that is by Theodore Prue, who's a bartender at the Grand Chicago Saloon, Chapin and Gore. His recipe is important kind of in the evolution of the drink, because like I said, like, he's not claiming to be the inventor of the drink as well. He's just the first one to call it an old-fashioned.
Right.
And in the name, recognizing this is the old-fashioned way of doing this.
Ah.
Yeah. So
finally.
So it was sort of more of a reference of like, this is just what an old-fashioned whiskey cocktail was before we started adding weird shit to it. And his kind of shows a few, like, there are a few important changes that are introduced here. One is that we're not drinking cocktails early in the morning as much as we move into the 1900s.
Maybe it's not medicine after all.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of slowing down and sipping. We're now like it's easy to like put ice in our drinks, and the ice kind of becomes an important ingredient. We're gently muddling the sugar with the bitters instead of using a syrup, which is, you know, mentioned before, a lot of the recipes involved syrup. And this is where we talk about one of my favorite lost bits of I love bar equipment, and I want to just give a little memorial for the tiny spoon.
The tiny spoon.
So let me tell you all about the tiny spoon.
I want to know about the tiny spoon.
It makes me sad. So basically, like, it kind of became cool at, like, in the early 1900s and really up to like the 1920s when you would serve an old fashioned. It sort of became like the style to give them like the glass, and they would already have the sugar and the bitters and everything and the ice, and you would like set the whiskey there, so they'd pour their own whiskey into the glass.
A trusting bartender. A friendly bartender.
Yeah.
You want to invite this bartender to your birthday party.
But it was sort of like a sign of respect for the customer, you know, like,
I trust you.
Yeah, you're gonna put your whiskey in, so you see that it's fresh, it's the amount of whiskey you want. And in that preparation, it was custom to have a little spoon in the glass, so you would just kind of stir it up real fast,
because you gotta stir it.
Yeah. And there was some sort of like cute etiquette around it, like you didn't want to drink it. Was for some reason it was sort of like not stylish to drink it with the spoon in it. Mm. It was dangerous, one person said. You might poke yourself in the eye.
Oh, my.
Also, like, you know, if you like, it just kind of showed that you're a little too quick to drink it if you haven't like thoughtfully disposed of the spoon. Mm. But you shouldn't put it on the bar, like, because that's sticky and gross.
Where do you put it?
Well, there's one article that talks about like gentlemen at the time having like a selection of small spoons in their breast pocket.
You got to keep the spoon?
You could keep the spoon.
Oh my God. I want to, guys, we got to bring this back. I want little spoons.
Well,
I just want little spoons. That's all I'm in it for.
But I think the cool part about this too is because, you know, anyone that's ever done the old fashioned, the old fashioned.
It's, well, very old fashioned. It is.
If you've ever muddled a sugar cube with bitters, little hot water, that's kind of all you do to break down the sugar, you still get a little bit of sugary residue in the bottom. Mm-hmm. And so what the spoon was also is then, like, after you finish your drink, you take the little spoon and you scoop out that little like boozy bitter sugar.
You get a little spoonful of sugar.
Yeah, you do. And that's what they jokingly would call it, dessert. Like, that's the dessert after your old fashioned, is you'd scoop out the sugar.
God.
I just like the whole like kind of, you know, a ritual around this, I think is really cute.
It helps the medicine go down.
Exactly. You get, there you go. You've had your medicine. There's your spoon. But that, maybe that's where those lyrics came from.
A spoonful of sugar. I think that is.
It's just all about the booze. Maybe you're right.
I think it is, guys. That actually would make sense. Guys, someone find this. Prove me right. It's your mission. I'm not going to do it.
Well, there's actually like, there's a recipe that kind of has all of this stuff. It actually originated in New Orleans, and it's like 1885, so it slightly predates the Theodore Prue one from Chicago, but it's all the same process. It just calls it the spoon cocktail.
The spoon cocktail.
Clearly somebody thought the spoon was as important as I do. This was my former self incarnated as a bartender in New Orleans.
You know that cocktail, the spoon cocktail.
I don't know why the name didn't catch on. I called it the spoon cocktail. I like the spoon. Unfortunately, as with the bitters I mentioned previously, the tiny spoon was another casualty of Prohibition.
Oh, no.
Went away during Prohibition. I mean, really, the cocktail itself was sort of lost during Prohibition.
Goodbye, tiny spoon. Right?
I actually, on a menu not too long ago.
I'm sorry. I just see a tiny spoon.
Just walking into the distance.
On a train.
Oh, no.
Waving a little handkerchief.
Goodbye, farewell.
Goodbye.
I guess I wasn't good enough for you. Oh, that makes me sad.
Oh no.
Well, I did the tiny spoon on a cocktail on a menu last summer. I had like an old fashioned variant. Demitasse spoons work for this, you know. There are readily available, cheap, like restaurant grade little spoons out there. People stole those spoons, which, yeah, I guess, is they were being gentlemen. I guess
they were just putting them in their breast pocket
to save for later. Anyway, so Prohibition not only killed the spoons, it also just sort of killed the old fashioned in general. Because if you look at what goes on in old fashioned, there's a big emphasis on quality spirits, and so much of what went on during Prohibition was about hiding the booze. You kind of had the perfect storm for losing a cocktail like the old fashioned, because you had talented bar people fleeing the country, going, you know, south of the border or to Europe.
They're getting the fuck out of there.
Yeah. And then you had, you know, like American whiskey was reduced to such small quantities that it was incredibly hard to get your hands on. You had an influx of like cheaply made spirits, poorly made spirits. Canadian whiskey was one of the things that was easier to get.
Whiskey without the E.
Yeah. And it was a lot lighter, so it didn't really work the same way in the old fashioned. So it really, the old fashioned was not a popular Prohibition specific cocktail.
All right, that's fair.
And this is the one other thing that happens during Prohibition to the old fashioned, is those that did still want to drink it, you had to work a lot harder to get it to be drinkable. So this is where you start, like, people would throw fruit in it and a bunch of extra sugar, powdered sugar, like top it with soda. This is all going to matter a lot pretty soon.
I mean, okay, so can I ask you about, because the cherry thing, the like the muddling the cherry?
Muddling the fruit doesn't, like, there's no recipe from this time period that talks about muddling fruit. That doesn't really get written down until like the late 30s, I believe.
Okay. I only mentioned it to say that, like, I did a very short stint at the Palm Tribeca for a little bit, but I also was behind the bar a little bit, and this was when I was first kind of dipping my toe into bartending. And the bartender there at the time showed me how to make an old fashioned, where you muddled a packet of sugar and a cherry, and it confused me so much because I also was just like learning what drinks were. So I was like, I was getting like an old fashioned and a Manhattan confused because there's a cherry garnish and a Manhattan, right?
Yes.
Yes. And like they both have whiskey. So I was so like, it was like, I'm like looking at my bartending book and like an old fashioned doesn't have a cherry in it from like what we like think of as an old fashioned today. It was very confusing. Well, I didn't learn a lot there because I was confused.
But that muddling of fruit in old fashioned, as much as it's not maybe in recipes from Prohibition time, I think it was probably like, there was just a lot of stuff that was, there was a lot of fruit being put into drinks.
It was
drinks.
Like residual. Like,
yeah. And okay. I think that's one concept that like, it can get kind of confusing when you see like all these different recipes that are called the same thing. And they all come from like, this is not a big time period we're dealing with. This is all like a period of like, you know, from like pre-prohibition, you know, 1920 to like, then when you look at the cocktail again in like mid-1930s, there's a lot going on with it. But that's really, I think if you kind of like widen your perception because of necessity and prohibition and then post-prohibition because of the sort of expanded palette of what an old-fashioned can be, it becomes something that everybody kind of likes a certain way or has an idea about what it should be. I mean, you have like people that drank it, that were introduced to it during prohibition, where it had a bunch of added stuff to it because that had to make it drinkable. An important demographic that wasn't drinking before Prohibition, that started drinking during Prohibition because everybody was drinking illegally, were women. And then after Prohibition, the Old Fashioned, one of the number one cocktails that women were ordering was an Old Fashioned. But, you know, a lot of them had been, and younger drinkers had been introduced to the Old Fashioned in the Prohibition way. So they wanted, they expected fruit. They expected soda. They expected powdered sugar. They were used to just, that was just how they were introduced to it. It wasn't something where there was one idea. Because once again, I think it's important to remember, we didn't have the internet at the time.
Right.
We couldn't all coalesce around what it could be.
Yes.
So you had people that came of drinking age and they went to a speakeasy, or they came of drinking age during Prohibition. They went to a speakeasy. The Old Fashioned they were introduced to was full of stuff. You had people that had been drinking before Prohibition and they remembered the classic Old Fashioned. You had people that had been drinking before that that liked the weird modified whiskey cocktails. You have people that went to Cuba and were introduced to, like during Prohibition, and were introduced to something called an Old Fashioned that had pineapple and coconut and all sorts of stuff in it. So you have people coming, like drinking all over the place, going, you know, coming back to these cities. And these ideas are like, you know, you can really see it coalesce in the 30s, where it was just really, it became a personal preference thing. I mean, the first time, I will say this, it was the Savoy cocktail book of the 1930s is where you first see the fruit inclusion.
Oh.
So you can definitely point a finger to that as like, put, like cementing it. But a lot of people at the time weren't having it. I think you came across this fact.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to research the Old Fashioned and not come across this article. So in 1936, the New York Times printed an article by someone who only signed as Old Timer. And he was very old fashioned. You know, or maybe she. I mean, you don't know, actually. You have no idea. It could have been a woman.
Maybe she wanted her old Chicago tea back.
Maybe. Okay, so should I do this in the old-timey voice?
I think you really... Okay, so Liz really wants to do a voice. So
From the future
when you're listening to this, I need you to will back to the past positivity, because Liz is about to do...
It just seems like when there's a long body of text that is going to be written, like a voice is unexpectedly going to come out, so I should try try to do one on purpose.
All right, old timer, read me your letter.
Time was when the affable and sympathetic bartender moistened a lump of sugar with Angostura bitters, dropped in a lump of ice, neither too large or too small, stuck in a miniature bar spoon, and passed the glass to the client with a bottle of good bourbon from which said client was privileged to pour his own drink. In most places, the price was 15 cents or 2 for a quarter. Nowadays, the modern or ex-speakeasy bartender drops a spoonful of powdered sugar into a glass, adds a squirt of carbonic to aid dissolution, adds that a dash or two of some kind of alleged bitters, and a lump of ice, regardless of size. Then he proceeds to build up a fruit compote of orange, lemon, pineapple, and cherry, and himself pours in a carefully measured 1.5 ounces of bar whiskey, usually a blend, and gives one a glass rod to stir it with. Price, 35 to 50 cents. Profanation and extortion. That's my new catchphrase, by the way.
I think they got a good point.
You know? Anytime something's unjust from now on, I'm going to say profanation and extortion.
I mean, you know, that person was not alone, though. I am not going to do a voice, but I found another quote from an angry article that described that incarnation of an old-fashioned as a fruit salad dunked in rye and crowned with a sprig of turnip green.
This is a turnip green fruit salad.
Like, people were mad. I don't blame them. I love Old Timer. I think Old Timer had a great point. I mean, I
didn't know if I loved him before this, but now I'm in love.
There was, and I mean, there was continual concern over what an old fashioned was and how it should be made during this time period. But at the same time, this is like, now we're moving into like the 40s and the 50s, and this is really when you get like another big kind of boom for the old fashioned cocktail. It's on the menus of chain restaurants. I mean, you could get it kind of anywhere. You get it at a Chinese restaurant, you get it at a deli. Like, it was hugely popular. This is, you know, nowadays, like, we get it like the Mad Men era where, yeah, like, everybody was drinking old fashions.
Right.
And it was consumed in some form. I saw one anecdote about, like, bartenders at this time would commonly make something called bug juice.
Yeah.
Well, it's a mix of bitters and sugar that they would just have ready to go.
Right. If you're going to make a lot of old fashions, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're just ready to dose out. You know, we're in the age of convenience. And so they would sell, he would buy them in the store, little cubes of like bitters and sugar kind of mixed together.
Oh, shit. All right.
Yeah. And they would sell them in like a pack with a muddler. So you were just ready to go.
Wow.
I would love to have those be a thing today, honestly.
If you have one, please send it to us.
It's like a novelty thing. Like, that sounds really cute.
We'll give you our addresses.
Yeah.
No, we won't. That's dangerous.
But of course, you know, as we've talked about before, you hit the wall of like the 60s and drinking culture changes. Yet again, we turn away from like boozy brown cocktails. Partially, it's a cultural rejection of our dad's drinks, you know.
Can't drink what the old man's drinking.
Everybody's doing drugs, so nobody needs rye anymore.
We love drugs, but we hate rye.
Then you get vodka in the 70s and 80s, and suddenly clear spirits kind of become the thing. No one really wants to drink heavy drinks. They're very passé. You already had a big blow to like education as far as bartenders go post-prohibition, especially then again reiterated through the 60s and 70s. So really, like, you know, you hit like the 80s, 90s, most bartenders really wouldn't know what to do, how to make a proper old fashioned. And as I mentioned, a lot of the more recent cocktail books of notes from like the 30s or 40s put the fruit in the glass, put all that weird shit in the glass. So that's kind of, even if you went and looked it up, you probably got one of those less revered recipes of the time. That brings us up to modern times. Now, one of the people that I would credit with really saving a lot of cocktails, but David Wondrich, who is a barman, a writer, a cocktail historian. Just as much as Jerry Thomas was important at preserving our craft back in the day, David Wondrich is sort of the modern incarnation of that. And he put the classic kind of fuss-free old-fashioned on his 2003 menu at a Brooklyn restaurant, Chicken Bone. This was kind of an important step in this growing cocktail revival that was happening. You know, at the same time, you had Robert Hess, who would go on to found some of the most important like cocktail bars in the country right now. He started using old fashioned as kind of his staple for judging young bartenders.
Oh.
Like, he'd have you make an old fashioned and he would judge a lot about you from that. So
I would lose.
I mean, I love that idea. I've heard of people doing the daiquiri like that, like making a young bartender make like a daiquiri over and over again. Mm. And then that's your interview. Okay. That sounds incredibly stressful. I feel like an old fashioned would be equally stressful. But they're both incredibly simple cocktails. But just the idea.
It would just be stressful. Yeah. Just in general. Just performing like that.
Oh, yeah. And just like, and I mean, and I think it almost makes more sense. Well, they both make sense because they both are simple cocktails that rely on very few ingredients, but ultimately have to be balanced. And I think that makes sense. Like, right. You know, I don't need to know your encyclopedic knowledge of 1,000 cocktails. I need to know that you can balance a drink properly and make it well. The old fashioned might change forms a lot because it's so simple that it invites change to it. In fact, even when I instruct young bartenders at my bar, I always say, like, I want to see how you make an old fashioned, but within reason, I want you to make your old fashioned. I don't want you to make my old fashioned. You know, like some people build it in a glass. Some people like a mix of Ango and orange bitters. Mm-hmm. Some people prefer bourbon. Some people prefer rye. Whatever your best old fashioned is, it's a cocktail that can be as much as like precise and like obsessed upon as it can be open form and like an easy like entry level formula that any new bartender, like home bartender that doesn't have a lot of experience. You can get some decent ice, some a cheap bottle of bitters, a decent bottle of booze, and some sort of sweetener and mess around. Like, the entry level for it it's very low. It's very easy to try out and have it home. And you can't forget, of course, the garnish. The garnish is not just a garnish in this case. It's one of four ingredients in the drink. Five if you count the ice. In this book that I mentioned earlier, they say basically along the lines of, what if you don't have fresh fruit for a twist? And they say, oh, well, don't make the drink.
Oh, okay. Save you the trouble there. Well, just don't then.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
The citrus oils are kind of essential in the whole drink. I'm sure there's science there and you can definitely taste it. It provides maybe an acidity or something. But like you just try, like if you're ever making an old fashioned home, try it before you put the twist on and then try it after. And it's just like it's a mile apart. But yeah, that's more or less right. The history of the enduring old fashioned.
Although there's obviously a lot of history there, it kind of evolves and persists more loosely as a style of preparation, right? Like you can sub out ingredients, you can even sub out the spirit.
Yeah, that's historically, I mean, that's something that we do as modern bartenders, but I think that's not the only time that we've historically done that, right?
Oh, no, you're right. Actually, almost simultaneously as the old-fashioned that most of us think of today, there is the old-fashioned that's traditional in Wisconsin. And that is what Ellen was asking about. So I want to get back to her question. If you order an old fashioned in Wisconsin without specifying, you will most certainly get a brandy old fashioned. And that happens because mostly of this time period in the late 1800s when Wisconsin had a lot of German immigrants. And apparently those immigrants loved brandy.
They loved their brandy.
They loved their brandy. And it was hard for those Germans to get brandy. And Germans must have brandy. So what happened was a company called Korbel saw an opportunity and they made an American brandy to show off at the World's Fair in Chicago in 1893. Now, Chicago is very close to Milwaukee. It's very close to Wisconsin. So a lot of Wisconsin folks and German immigrants are there because it's close. And they're like, we're going to go check out the World's Fair, right? And they love it because they love brandy. And because it's American brandy, and they're like, cool, this is American brandy. We're Americans now.
That's very cute.
Yeah. And actually, Wisconsin is the top state in the country for brandy consumption.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And specifically, I mean, the brand that's most popular there is still Korbel.
Okay.
And to, like, the fruit that we were talking about earlier, the modifications as far as adding a lot of fruit and muddling fruit in an old fashioned, that also kind of happens here in Wisconsin, where we have this, like, kind of bubble of this specific kind of old fashioned happening, because German immigrants there are used to drinking something on the sweeter side.
Okay.
So they're into that. And still to this day, in this style of old fashioned, a garnish of an orange wheel and a cherry skewered together is standard. That's what you're going to get.
It's a flag.
It's a flag. Oh, that is a flag.
It's usually cherry flag or lemon flag. But yeah, like
it's a cherry orange flag.
Yeah. The circle with the cherry skewered through, or the, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's how they do it. That is 100% how they do it.
Oh, that's cute.
And you mentioned bug juice earlier.
Yeah.
So in a lot of places, because they serve so much old fashions, they have the premix of bug juice.
Oh, okay.
And so they'll just, they'll make the drink with the bug juice and the brandy, and then they will add whatever modifier is going to make it into 4 different variations on this variation of an old fashioned. They can, like, you know, they'll usually, they can just like reach for a soda gun or whatever. The first one is sweet, and that is with either 7-Up or Sprite. So they'll just take the gun and top you off with a little bit of that. Or you can have it sour, and that is with either Sour Mix or with Squirt soda. Or both.
Huh.
Yep. I'm not knocking anybody who likes it, their brandy old fashioned sour, you know, just like Squirt is just a funny soda. or you can have it press, which is seltzer and lemon lime soda, or you can just have it a brandy old fashioned soda, which is just with topped with a little seltzer. If you don't specify, they'll probably make it sweet, because that is kind of the default.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, what I think is really cool here is that, like, there was, at the end of the 19th century and into the beginning of the 20th century, there was this big divide and distinction between people who wanted to, quote unquote, improve on the old fashioned, and the old fashioned purists who just wanted, like, this old, simple version. And Wisconsin is just an entire state that ran with the, let's fuck with it version, you know? I mean, what they really did was just make an entirely different drink. And you can have, like, beyond the different modifiers within the brandy old fashioned, like, there's all these different garnishes you can have on it. Like, you can do olives,
or so, like, pickled
mushrooms,
Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. I mean, it's really just, like, up to your preference. It's whatever. It's just really, it's a own whole thing. Did I mention that Wisconsin drinks more brandy than any other state? I feel I should say that again.
Yeah.
It's important.
I love that. But, you know, one thing that's, I think it's cool that, for one, that they have this identity of the old fashioned that is a state thing. I think that's cool. And, like, do I drink my old fashions that way? No. But you're right. No one should knock it, because it's one thing that I do tend to notice in the cocktail world is that the sweeter a drink is, or the sweeter somebody's preference is, the more we look down on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it's fascinating that different areas of the country and then different areas of the world have different drinking palates.
Yeah.
I mean, we have different food palates. But that would make sense.
Absolutely.
I would love to do, like, a tour, a study to see, like, how do people across the country drink their versions of classic cocktails? Because we know the big cities, the cocktail scenes, everybody has to make them a certain way or people are going to judge you. But, like, you know, Wisconsin's up there being like, nope, this is what we like.
Yeah. And they're pretty much across the board. Like, this is, it's kind of their unofficial state drink.
I think that's cool. Like, I love culture like that, that comes from a cool place and like has individuality to it, which is really the old fashioned is kind of the epitome drink of that, in that there were all these people that felt the need to write articles and rail against change or complication or whatever. And that's the way they like it is valid. But man, if you like it, if it makes you happy, if you enjoy drinking it, if it's part of your history, like, then drink it.
I'm just glad you found something you're finally passionate about, you know?
Right. If it's squirt, squirt in your old fashioned, then that's fine. hey old timers.
Hey old timers.
Don't worry. You can still have your bitter old fashions. I'll be right there with you. That's how I like mine. It's kind of like the super, like the Churchill martini we've talked about, where you just look at the vermouth bottle. I want you to look at the simple syrup across the bar while you just add more bitters to my whiskey. And that's what I want. I don't actually want you to add simple syrup to it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of variations that you can. The only one that I can think of is the one with mezcal. What is that?
The Oaxacan old fashioned.
The Oaxacan. Are there other ones? If you go back to like Jerry Thomas's book, right off the bat, he's got a recipe for the old fashioned Holland gin cocktail, which is basically, it's just an old fashioned with gin.
Yeah.
Like, people have been using other spirits. People have been modifying it from the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and I think that even though by and large whiskey is the spirit that became most associated with it, nowadays, modern bar menus, it's your hard part. I don't know who was out there making a vodka old fashioned, but no. I'm sure somebody is.
I'm sorry, no.
Look, I'm not going to yuck your yum if that's your thing. But definitely, I think just because of the structure of it, it's such a great way to celebrate a spirit that has a lot of nuance to it. Mm-hmm. Rum old fashions are delicious. Tequila old fashions, mezcal old fashions. Gin, you know, it scares a lot of people away to drink gin in that way, because you're
gin
just...
Gin scares a lot of people.
It does. But yeah, I've had gin old fashions that are good. I think really any spirit that... It's just, that's where you get into the fun math of it, where when you look at like, what does whiskey bring to the table? You know, and then we're balancing it off with like the warm baking spices that are kind of the Angostura bitters are awakening certain parts of the whiskey. The sugar is adding just a little touch of sweetness. You know, the things and the elements are working to balance out the whiskey. So whatever spirit you're bringing to the table, how can you modify that with your choice of bitters and your choice of syrup? Mm. You mentioned the Oaxacan Old Fashioned. That's one where you're dealing with like, it's tequila and mezcal. Mm. Reposado tequila, I think, is the traditional. This is a cocktail that's been invented like the last 20 years, but it's a modern classic. And then you're using agave, though, which is smart because agave is your sweetener, and agave is made, it's what tequila is made from. So you kind of goes together thought
right
there. But that's really what it is. I love the old fashioned formula because you can really just, it's such a simple formula that you can really think through every ingredient. Well, we're going to make that brandy old fashioned because I've never had one before.
Me neither. I'm so curious.
I am too. I feel like, you know, I don't usually drink cocktails that have Sprite in them, but I'm not going to knock it till I try it.
We're going to try it. You know what? We're going to try it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll knock it, but we'll try it first.
And we're going to make that Oaxacan old fashioned. We've made a classic old fashioned on here before. Yeah. But we're going to show you a slightly different, like modern classic take on the old fashioned. If you're intimidated by the thought of home bartending, this is such an easy drink to make. And it has a really cool history and an enduring history. And a lot of the history is kind of like, F you, I'm going to drink what I like to drink, which I like.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Well, thank you to all of you who have donated to our Patreon, and thank you to all of our new Patreon members. We really couldn't keep making this without you, nope. And we are so excited to announce that we will be adding some monthly gifts to our Patreon.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I'm excited about this.
Yeah. So along with the extra video and audio content, just being a patron at the $1 level will get you a monthly sticker. In addition, if if you decide to be a $5 patron, we will be sending you a monthly coaster as well as everything else. So we have some really lovely, neat goodies designed by Taylor there. Yay! So, and as a special thank you for sticking by us, everyone who has been a patron, as well as anyone who joins us before the end of February, we will be sending you all a sticker with our lovely logo on it and a coaster. So after this month, the coaster is going to be a monthly gift for our $5 donors. But once again, if you do give $5 or more, you get the digital content, a monthly sticker, and a monthly coaster. So if you want to be one of our Patreon supporters, we are going to put that link in our show notes. Go for it. Thank you to everyone who tweeted and retweeted about the show. It really helps us get the word out. Carrie C., Dorothy Hoover, Stephanie Cooperstein, Emerson Depression, Bison of the New Year, Justin Hoops McElroy, Big Writing Helper, Austin Wills, Terrifyingly Intelligent Nerdface, Caitlin Wierzynski, Mary Smurl, Purple Worm. Everybody, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at NeatBoozeCast. Don't forget that if you tweet at us, don't put our handle first or no one else can see it. Thank you to Absurdist for our wonderful theme music. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe, rate, give us a review if you like. Like, follow, subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. We really appreciate it. And don't forget to head over to our YouTube channel for some old-fashioned cocktail making. We're going to bring that to you this Tuesday. So look out, and you can always watch our old videos on there too.
Yeah. So let's go do that now. I'm ready for a drink.
Yeah, let's go. Just
talking about old fashions.
Tell them who you are.
Oh, I've been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Liz June.
And this has been Neat.